Welcome to another episode of the No Ceilings Podcast. I'm Tyler Metcalf, joined, as always, by Rucker. Tyler Rucker, how are we doing?
Heavy question. I'm doing good. You know, probably on my fourth or fifth cup of coffee today. So it's been that type of grind lately, Metcalf. I feel like me and you are both in the same world. And to sprinkle it all up on top of that, we have draft season in peak full force, which is fantastic because it helps me sleep better at night. But I'm good. This is a special one. I'm very excited for this. Not a lot of texts get me as excited as Metcalf sending me peer review, ? So I'm very, very excited for this one, sir. How are you doing?
Day by day. But it's draft season. And the Timberwolves are relevant in the playoffs again. So, you know, what's there to complain about? Anthony Edwards is that dude, and he's 22. So very exciting stuff.
So damn good. It's funny how I feel like both of our basketball teams right now are literally saving our lives. That and the No Ceilings crew.
This is a fun one.
This is fun.
I'm excited for this episode. No rookie roulette this week. No green room. We'll push all that to next week. I also realized that I forgot to spin the wheel last week for rookie roulette, so I'll do that after this episode or sometime this weekend, and we'll figure that out for next week as well. But we got a full slate with just the main topic today. Mock draft peer review. We did a tankathon sim. Lottery is rapidly coming up, so we figured why not have a little bit of fun before the draft order fully gets set. So we had a bit of chaos going on. The way this works, if you're new to the program, we're just going to run through five picks at a time. Rucker and I both did a first round mock of our own, and we're just going to go through five picks at a time, likes, dislikes, disagreements, and just kind of pick each other's brains about the different possibilities and how the draft board could potentially fall. All right, let's just dive right in. Rucker, give me your 1 through 5.
Yeah, for everyone listening, I have bad news and good news. The bad news is I didn't update the graphics, so you're not going to have graphics on the screen. But the good news, we could track it along while we're going. So here's my top five, Metcalf. Okay, the order. Charlotte Hornets, Raptors, Pistons, Jazz, Wizards. I had Alex Sarr to the Hornets, swinging upside. Raptors, I had Nikola Topic. I think best player available. Pistons, Zachary Richichet. Yes, Pistons, if you want to come at me. My username is Tyler_Rucker on Twitter. Let's talk. Jazz, Stephon Castle, which is still one of my favorite fits. And then the Washington Wizards at 5. I went Rob Dillingham. Ooh. Sir, you're up.
Okay. At 1 to the Hornets, I went Stephon Castle. 2 to the Raptors, I went Alex Sarr. 3 to the Pistons, I went Reed Shepard. 4 to the Jazz, Nikola Topic. 5 to the Wizards, Donovan Clingan.
Okay, this is going to be really fun to have to do this while we're also talking. So I'm probably going to just like hit me with your 5 again. So Charlotte Hornets at 1.
Castle. Sarr.
We're having fun Shepard. Here. Shepard, you can't stop fighting the Shepard to Detroit. I love it so much.
What's wrong with it?
We're going to talk about it.
So Utah, Topic.
Okay, Topic. And then Wizards.
Clingan.
All right. And for everyone listening, I love you guys. I'm writing last names only. If you're here, you understand who everyone is by now. I'll try to juice it up a little bit. Fun order. Fun order. The tankathon sim, when you sent it to me, I was like, okay, here we go. We got chaos right off the bat with the Hornets. I didn't have the balls to go Castle at 1 there. And it's still one of my favorite fits is if Castle ends up with Charlotte, because shout out LaMelo Ball, is new tattoo, if that's confirmed. That was just eye-opening. Page out of Birdman. I still love Castle going there regardless. Because of Brandon Miller, I just swung Alex Sarr because of the upside. I understand, I guess, in theory, you're putting him with Mark Williams. You're kind of having a nice little duo down low with the defense. Topic at 2 was just like a best player, in my opinion. And I do love Castle there, too. I love Castle to pretty much all these teams. So what are you thinking?
Yeah, and I went Castle at 1 just because that's best player for me. I think he fits along LaMelo and Brandon Miller too. I still really like Mark Williams, but I don't think that he's the reason. If you have Sar number one on your board, he's not the reason that you're not drafting Sar, that you're not going for BPA there. So I have no issues with that if that's how your board falls. Topic at two was interesting. I'm surprised he's risen that much for you.
Yeah. I got to the point right now where I'm watching his stuff and I'm going back and I just keep telling myself, like, if I was in a war room and someone was like, hey, there's a 6'6 high feel playmaking guard with some offensive upside. He can get to the lane. He can finish with touch. I'm just also a big believer of the shot will come around. Like, the shot's going to improve with a lot of these young guys. It might not improve to the dream level of, hey, Topic is a 43% sharpshooter, but I think it will get to a level in which it's respectable. So with that and all that stuff and all the boxes I'm checking right now, I'm like, he's going to be a top guy. We'll see if the knee was a real thing when it comes to medicals or if he was just playing it smart. I think he was just playing it smart. I just am buying. I'm buying as much as I can. I'm back in on that train as quick as possible. And we got Topic versus Mega tomorrow, or as everyone's listening to this in the morning, you know, pull out your phone, look up the box score, Red Star versus Mega. So that's going to be another one. If he has another good game, especially against his old club, things are going to get really cooking when it comes to his buzz.
Yeah. And I have him at three on my board. I still love the idea of him going to Washington. In the scenario, the Jazz jumped up and I think that fit made a lot of sense. The Raptors fit.
Does it work with him and Keontae?
Of course. Yeah. Okay. God, that team desperately needs a playmaker. I love Keontae's grown on ball with his creation and playmaking, but I still don't think he's a point guard.
I think he's just a damn good player. That you're just like, put someone with him in the backcourt and just, you know, like, well,
Keontae or Topic?
Keontae.
Yeah, no, I agree. Yeah. This is no indictment on Keontae. It's just,
no. I'm just saying
that's zero playmaking.
I think we're getting away from like, oh, okay, now Keontae looked like a point guard. We have to get a shooting guard alongside him. I think at this point, the NBA is just like, get a guy that can work in your backcourt and then the two of them can play off each other. Fantastic. So I know some Jazz fans might be like, hey, Keontae, I would just get another good damn player there and roll with it. Clinging at five, it just seems like they're starting to, I wonder if that's the floor.
Yeah. Let's talk about Washington. Okay. You went Dillingham. I went Clinging. Arguably the two most polar opposite players on the board. So my reasoning with Klingon was that he's minimum 20 minutes a night of just really stable, reliable defense, rebounding, and passing. I'm a little skeptical on the offensive upside outside of the passing. A lot of people believe that he's going to shoot it in some capacity. Not, you know, Karl Anthony Towns levels of spacing the floor, but Valanciunas esque levels of spacing the floor, which if he does, awesome. But the bigger reason was the defense and that defensive cornerstone and just having that reliability. They have, I think they're the only big man on their roster right now is Marvin Bagley, and he might be a free agent this summer. So just getting that defensive cornerstone, that consistent screener, passer, post presence, to pair with a young raw wing and Koulibaly and the continued development of Denny. I just think he gives that team a real identity that they're lacking.
The problem is I completely agree with you because I could talk myself with Klingon in a lot of places. And that's kind of we're already starting to see a little bit of momentum buzz right now about people being like, hey, why couldn't Klingon get up there? And I feel like in a weird way, if you're selling yourself on Sar, everyone's going to overreact to this, so it's great. If you're selling yourself on Sar and Klingon's healthy, why can't you buy in on Klingon? If you're looking for the tools, I think Klingon's playmaking and feels a lot better. He's a bigger boy. He's going to be tough to move. And if you're buying the versatility, the mobility, the shot blocking, yes, he's humongous. He's going to get picked apart by some point guards, but he's also incredibly gifted as when it comes to anticipation, feel, defensive awareness. So if the frame holds up, if he gets a green light with his health, I think there's a world in which five could be the absolute floor. I could see him going up and buying and getting higher up, but there's always the big if. So it's just going to be interesting to see. And, you know, doing this exercise, it was the first time I got to like 5-6. I was like, Klingon could go way earlier than this. And it's just, it's interesting because we're already starting to see some people like heating up the plate again of like, could he go top three? Could he go one? Like, it's going to be really fascinating. Did you have any other thoughts, or are we going to?
Yeah, just talk me through Dillingham. Why you put him with Washington?
Because I think
concerns.
Yeah, the concerns are going to be the defense and stuff. But I also think Washington's in a point where if you left with Klingon or Dillingham, I think you're getting a really good piece to continue to build. Like, this is another important year of this rebuild for this new front office. You look like you hit a home run with Coulibaly. You got to get one more. Like, get one more. Start being strategic. This is going to be a long process for Wizards fans. So if they left with Klingon or Dillingham, I think that'd be a home run at this pick right here. Obviously, it's funny because we got 10 days to the lottery, and so many teams might be bummed if they don't get number one. And I think this year might be a blessing if you get down a little bit, because the value is going to start falling into people's hands, and you might get, it might be a blessing. I'm just saying it's going to be weird, but I don't know. I still like Dillingham there. I'm buying it. I think he's got buzz. I just think microwave scorer, if you're buying the playmaking and that it can be a jolt offensively, be a great addition.
Fair enough. Let's move on to 6 through 10. At 6, Portland Trailblazers, I went Risa Shea. 7, the Spurs, I went Jared McCain. At 8, for the Grizzlies, I went Dalton Knecht. 9, to the Rockets, I went Rob Dillingham. 10, to the Hawks, I went Tristan Da Silva.
Whoa! you weren't kidding. I mean, you're having a week. Goodness, good for you. I'm really proud of you for that. Okay, so I went
for what it's worth, I considered Da Silva even earlier, but
I love that out of you. 6, I did Donovan Klingon. 7, to the Spurs, Reed Shepard. 8, to the Grizzlies, Matis Bezelis. 9, to the Rockets, Jared McCain. And I thought I was getting spicy, and you just took it up another notch. And Ron Holland to the Hawks at 10.
Who did you have to the Spurs?
Reed Shepard.
Ah, yeah. Classic. You just can't.
Pretty good top 10. You know, I liked those fits a lot. We just did an episode on Risa Shea, so I don't want to fascinate there. Where do you want to start?
Let's talk about the Grizzlies.
Let's talk about the damn Grizzlies. What are your thoughts?
So this is where I first started considering Da Silva. Just as kind of do-it-all role player, consistent, reliable wing where you know exactly what you're going to get from him. He can play with the starters. He can play off the bench. He's not going to hurt you. I ended up going Connect just because I think that's the scoring upside with him is so much higher, especially with a healthy Ja. And, you know, I think he can play alongside Desmond Bane and Marcus Smart and Jaren Jackson. And I just think the offensive upside is so much higher there, even if, you know, if things go right and he continues developing in a really awesome way, like we hope he will. You know, maybe that they have to move one of their guys, and maybe that's some Desmond Bane insurance down the road. But I went Connect just because I think the off-ball shooting and off-ball scoring is so incredible with him right now, but it was really close for me with Da Silva.
It's not going to shock me if Da Silva starts getting cooking in this pre-draft process. I've heard good things. He's a tough kid. I think that is, I never thought of this until right now. He's probably after Connect the super or the senior that's probably going to get the most buzz of high floor, interesting pick. I could see him. That's what I said before. Like we asked around to a lot of people, and the same thing you kept getting was, I like him. I like him. And it's like when that keeps getting said about multiple teams, there's something there. That mean I'm like, okay, that doesn't mean he's going to fall because everyone likes him. So he's going to be really interesting. I think Memphis, though, when we're talking about it, is one of the most fascinating teams right now in this top 10, because every year we keep saying like, okay, they're probably not going to pick here again. They just dealt with some injuries. We're really thinking they're not going to be picking here again. They look like they struck gold on GG. Everyone's going to come back healthy. So it's, do you get someone that's going to help raise the ceiling of this team? Might not be the biggest swing for upside, but might be someone like De Silva, someone like Dalton Connect, where it's like, hey, you're getting an asset right away. Or do you double down on what you just got with Gigi and you swing? It's tough because I do think there's an argument when you get into the top 10, you're always saying swing. But when you're a team like Memphis, you got to weigh, would you rather do that or would you rather lean towards getting someone that could probably help you in theory right away? I swung with Bozelas. I still kind of like his fit there, but I really think Connect would make a ton of sense for them. I mean, if you get Dalton Connect and Gigi coming off your bench, woo, that is firepower on the perimeter. So I like it.
I do think it makes sense that we both kind of went with a wing there. You know, I love the idea of Killian there, but I don't think he's going to fall that far. We both obviously had him going earlier. But just, I think applying that pressure and just continuing to build that depth on the wing is going to be really important for them. Let's talk Jared McCain real quick.
Let's do it.
It's been a while. I had him going 7 to the Spurs. I think his career is going to trend more towards being a point guard than a shooting guard. It's good to see some people kind of jump on that train as well recently, but I think he has way more passing and playmaking and pick and roll creation to his game. Just incredible off-ball shooter. So with the Spurs, obviously that's fits nicely alongside guys like Vassell and Wemby. But he can also kind of run the show and make solid decisions and then be an awesome rebounder. You had him going 9 to the Rockets.
You had him at 7. So the Spurs. Where do you have him?
7.
I got him at 11. Don't love it because I want to move him up. I love McCain.
What's holding you back from putting him higher? Or why am I insane for having him that high?
You're not insane. The guys I have ahead of him, I think, are right now in my mind have the higher upside swing. But every time I look at McCain, I'm like, this has everything of a 10-year NBA vet that plays at a high level, 10 years minimum. And rebounding translates. We talked to a very well-known scout, and this is his first thing. He's like, I'll always go get the rebounders. Rebounding translates. And I was like, well, Jared Dan McCain can rebound the basketball for being an undersized guard. So heard good intel. We've heard great things. That's the name I think will be buzzing. It will not shock me if he ends up in the top 10. Will not shock me. And I think he makes a lot of sense in a lot of places. But my problem is like, I want to move him up. I'm at the point right now, Metcalf, where you've already taken the leap. I'm at the point where if I take the leap, I'm moving him up. Like it's a big leap and there's names I want to move him up from, but you know, we'll see. Maybe I danced with that before our big boards are due. I love everywhere we've projected him. Does he not make sense anywhere?
I don't think so, because you know, at a minimum, you're getting an awesome off-ball shooter and a really good positional rebounder.
Like, even if teams took him that have guard depth, I still would get if you took him. Yeah. If you just love him, you're like, he's just a hooper. He's going to be here forever. Like, I get it, but I still think, you know, where we put him with the Spurs, that could be the wild card that we're all not thinking of. The Spurs, like, yeah, we'll take McCain, but he'd be fantastic there. So,
yeah. And I think he's so really versatile. And over the last 2 years between high school and, you know, his 1 year at Duke, we've seen him play a lot of different roles. So I think he's too often getting just billed as just this off-ball shooter. And, you know, if he ends up being, you know, quote unquote, just Seth Curry, that's a really good pro career still. And in this draft that has a lot of questions, if you can get that type of off-ball shooter at a minimum, I think that's easy, you know, top 10, top 14 consideration. But if you think he has a lot more on-ball creation, a lot more passing instincts and pick-and-roll creation, like I tend to lean towards, that's where I think the top 10 almost becomes a lock with him. But it'll be fascinating. Let's move on to 11 through 15 after a quick break.
I've always dreamed of being able to order my coffee in Italian like a local, instead of just pointing at the menu and hoping for the best. There's something about speaking another language with real confidence that opens up a whole new world of experiences. That's why I'm so excited about Rosetta Stone Sapphire. It's their biggest launch in over a decade. It takes that research-backed method we all know and trust and adds fresh, cutting-edge features that make it easier than ever to go from knowing a few phrases to speaking naturally about the topics you actually care about. What I love is that you aren't just memorizing vocabulary lists. You learn entirely in your new language through visuals and audio, just like you did as a kid. One of my favorite new features is Chat Missions. It turns conversation practice into a game, putting you in real-world scenarios, like ordering at a restaurant or asking for directions, and giving you missions to complete. You get real-time feedback along the way, so you build that confidence before you ever have to use your skills in the real world. If you want to take your language skills to the next level, don't wait to try Rosetta Stone Sapphire. Listeners of this podcast can get 20% off their Rosetta Stone Sapphire subscription when they sign up today. This gets you access to Rosetta Stone Sapphire in 25 languages. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10 to redeem your 20% off. That's rosettastone.com/rs10.
Okay, Rucker. At 11, I have Ron Howland going to the Bulls. At 12, I have Cody Williams going to the Thunder. At 13, I have Johnny Furphy going to the Kings. At 14, I have Bouzelis going to the Trailblazers. And at 15, I have Devin Carter going to the Heat.
I'm going to let you enter your picks while I read off mine. So for the Chicago Bulls, I had Dalton Connect. For the Oklahoma City Thunder, I also had Cody Williams. Shout out, Metcalf. 13 to the Kings. I did Kyle Filipowski, which Metcalf will love. 14 to the Trailblazers. I did Kyshawn George. And 15 to the Miami Heat. I did Devin Carter as well.
Where do you want to start?
It's just funny with Cody. Cody's giving me headaches right now. It's just funny. We both were like, okay, yeah, he makes sense there. I do believe that would be very, very difficult for them to pass that up. Sacramento's become a wild card now because I don't know what direction they could go in. I feel like they might be BPA. You had Ron Holland to the Bulls. Damn it,
Metcalf. You did share the spreadsheet with me, so I can't enter it.
Oh, I guess I'm going to have to send you that link right now. We're on fire. Hey, we're on fire, guys. Where do you want to start? I'm going to DM it.
So why did you go Cody to the Thunder?
Not what I didn't do for the obvious reasons that everyone thinks. I did it because I think that's the biggest upside swing in a team that could be patient. Yes, his brother plays for the team, but I also think there's going to be a team that looks at Cody and says, let's review the film from before his injury and after. Two different players. Cody needs time. He is going to be a raw ball of clay that needs someone to be patient, let his frame build out. If the frame builds out and you're patient, that is a bad dude waiting to be unlocked. He just needs a team to install some confidence and say, we are thinking big picture here. We're not in any rush to throw you to the wolves and get immediate results. And I think a team like the Thunder with 900 picks would gladly take on that project and say, we're no rush, because he has the tools. Like, I know everyone's soured on Cody all year, but like before that injury, dude was legit. Like, he has crazy upside. I just think you could clearly tell he tried to come back from that injury, just didn't look the same with the aggressiveness. Then he was banged up and tried to come back for the tournament, and you could just tell, like, running up the court, I was like, oh, he's clearly bothered by that ankle. And I would just think he would be a fantastic get for some team that's trying to be patient.
Yeah, I tend to agree. It was more, for me, it was more so long-term thinking, which has been pretty consistent with how they've drafted and kind of continue to build this team that's way ahead of schedule. And I just think, you know, obviously his brother being there would likely help, you would assume, given how Jalen tends to go to bat for him on social media. We both really like him long term. I don't think he's going to be contributing as a rookie pretty much anywhere he goes, unless he goes top three and just gets a ton of minutes right off the bat. I think he's just going to be a long term project. And a place like OKC, who is going to have a handful of wings kind of aging out or getting expensive in the coming years, that'll be right when he's hopefully kind of hitting the ground running, where his body's matured and caught up to, you know, his peers, and the game is slowed down and the shot has become more consistent and everything's ready to go. So that's why I went with him there. And it wasn't just because Jalen's there. It helps, but, you know, not the only reason.
It definitely helps, but we're not that stupid.
Well,
like, I'm not going to project that, oh, his brother's on the team, so I'm going to put, like, I put him there because it makes this perfect amount of sense for that organization with the track record, his upside. I think we had a comment by one of the fans, like, shout out Dirty Dancer, you're OG in the comments, but the overreaction has been absurd. He did look like a different player after the injury. So it's well deserved because the film's different, but the context has to be understood. And I do believe there's a lot of guys like that this pre-draft might help them get back up a little bit, get some momentum going. And I think a team that stretches patience, because we have to remember, these teams are not drafting these guys as now like finished products. They're like, what is Cody Williams going to look like 3 years from now? What is Cody Williams going to look like when it's time for his second contract? If you're buying that guy can turn into a beast, you'd be very smart to go get him early and just be patient and have a plan in place. So I think it could shock us that he still goes earlier than expected, but we'll see. He's going to have to show some stuff during the pre-draft, and teams are going to want to get him for workouts, and, you know, got to see if that body can add some weight.
All right, you went Keyshawn George at 14 to Portland. That was kind of your first big reach?
My first swing?
You know, just based on kind of consensus, based on consensus currently. Settle down. My God, you're defensive. What was your thought process behind George going there? Because we have, you know, we know that he has some fans and would expect, especially during the pre-draft process, for his name to steadily keep rising. Nothing? You've gone?
Nope. Having audio difficulties, which has been really fun. So give me a sec, Metcalf.
Yeah, I'll monologue here. We both went Devin Carter to the Heat. He feels incredibly Heat culture. Just point of attack defender, solid decision maker, playmaker. And the scoring and the shooting versatility took a huge jump this year. I'm still not sure I buy the shot at an NBA level in terms of what he did at Providence this year. But it made major improvements from the year before. So really like Carter there to Miami. Then I went Buzelis with the Trailblazers. I've been kind of skeptical on Buzelis all season, but especially at 14, if he falls that far, I think he's more than worthy of the swing. His defense was so much better than I anticipated coming into the year. So if that shot comes around, if he's able to be that kind of off-ball spot-up shooter that a lot of us expected that he could be coming into the year, that we hoped, and he kind of gets back to his roots as a of what he showed in high school, I think that's going to be a huge home run swing for the Trailblazers, who have a bunch of kind of toolsy wings, but none of them have proven to shoot yet. I know they really like Rupaire. He's grown a ton. They really, really like him long term. And I think Buzelis kind of playing off of Scoot and Shaden and Simons. And, you know, I had them taking Risa Shea earlier. I think taking two of those toolsy wings with really high upside as off ball scorers just kind of gives them a safety net to keep building this team around Scoot and Simons and Sharp. Okay, so Rucker's having some technical issues, so I will just kind of move on to the next batch of picks here. With 16 through 20, at 16, the 76ers. This was probably one of my bigger reaches. I went Neek Clifford at 17, the New Orleans Pelicans. I went Isaiah Collier at 18 to the Orlando Magic. I went Jacoby Walter at 19 to the Raptors. I took another kind of big swing. I think he's going to be another guy who kind of keeps rising a lot of boards, especially once measurements come out. I went AJ Johnson and 20 to the Cavs. I went Tyler Smith. Rucker, are you MIA still, or what's going on?
No, I'm good. I'm sorry. That was unbelievable. So, okay. 16 to the Philadelphia 76ers. I did Tristan Da Silva. 17 to the Pelicans. I did Isaiah Collier. 18 to the Magic. Tyler Smith. 19, Jacoby Walter to the Toronto Raptors. And 20 to the Cavs. Someone I think that might go much earlier than this, Jalen Tyson. I apologize to everyone. That was incredible. I think I'm having some issues with sharing the screen. So we're just going to rattle these off and everyone can try to follow with us. Okay, so you went Neek Clifford at 16, which is a holy crap welcome back to the peer review. Sorry for making you go a little rant there. To answer your previous question, Kaishan, I believe someone's going to swing upside with multiple picks. I think the Blazers could be
a whole bunch of comments asking about Kaishan. So just give your 2 cents on him, why you like him that high.
I'm off the rails now, so let's get fucking weird. I think Kaishan's going to be your upside swing. I think some team's going to really be buying a sharpshooter. I know everyone's going to look at his stats and be like, what? But this is a kid that late bloomer can spread the floor from very deep. There is serious offensive tools just waiting to be unlocked. Beautiful shot, very smooth. I think also just some raw tools that, you know, a team like Portland, we talked about them previously when we did the Scoot Henderson rookie roulette Metcalf. I was like, they're not far. I was like, they're not going to contend next year, but they're not far. And I said, if Scoot takes another step, Shane Sharp's healthy, you got Simons. And if you could hit on this draft with two picks, I really would be interested. And I had them going clinging early. I feel like that would be like, okay, got the guy we want. And then I was like, hey, at this point, I'd be swinging a little bit. And Kaishan's just the upside swing that you could really, really be patient and unlock a damn dangerous player. I know the stats, everyone's going to look at it, but I'm just saying from what I watched, what I've seen on tape, I think there's crazy upside for him to be a real problem at the next level. So I think Portland's one of those teams where they're just going to keep adding assets and not rush, just keep developing. And then all of a sudden you're going to look up and be like, phew, they've got a roster brewing. So, that's why I'm so high on Kaishan.
Okay. Where do you want to go in the 16 to 20 range?
where do you get your coffee? Because Neat Clifford at 16, I love him, but you're like, you really had a week. I like that. It's bold. It's aggressive. The fit makes a lot of sense.
Is more so fit. Because I, who knows what this roster is going to look like in a couple months. We've gone to Silva there a ton. I thought about Ryan Dunn there, but it's something that we've done a ton. So, yeah, you know, it was
so boring.
It was kind of another one of these 3-and-D play finishing wings that I think fits that similar mold of the type of player that we keep putting there. And I just kind of wanted to mix it up a little bit. I love his defense. I love how much he kind of showed with his off-ball offensive versatility to close out the season, especially against Virginia, with his ability to attack closeouts, get to the rim, pass out of those drives. So I just think he's a really solid, complimentary, low-maintenance wing who is one of the best perimeter defenders in the class. So it's a bit of a reach probably at this point, but just given the uncertainty of what that roster is going to look like, you know, couple months from now, it was more so fit and archetype there than necessarily that specific player.
I completely get it. Everyone's got to be open-minded this year, because these swings like this are going to happen, because teams are going to be like, I don't love anything on the board, but this guy checks a ton of boxes, and yes, he's older, but might be a player that could come in and help us right away. And I think there's a lot of guys I have marked down as this could be someone that makes some noise in the pre-draft process, because I've talked to execs, I've talked to scouts, and they're like, this year is as big as ever for the pre-draft process. Like, we need to see these guys up close. We need to get them to talk to them, because we have questions all over the place. So I think you gotta open your mind. You gotta get a little dangerous when it comes to your thinking, and don't get married to consensus, because consensus might be thrown out the window this year. And I really do like Neek as a bit of a wild card. Trying to think of what else. Oh, we had a fan. We got to do this. We had a fan, shout out Magic, that said, what's the top five options? And shout out Trey. And I promised him we were going to talk about it on the air. I went Tyler Smith. You went Jacoby, which would be a very fun fit.
Yeah.
What would be some names you think could be realistic in that wheelhouse? My favorite dream for them is the Silva.
That makes a lot of sense, too.
Makes a lot of sense.
I think Jacoby and Tyler Smith are probably two right at the top of the board. DeSilva makes a lot of sense. Johnny Furphy, I would throw up there. His range is going to be fascinating.
Yeah, it is. Whoever you ask, it is already. It's like, whoa, what? Okay. I think Tyson could be a wild card there.
I think someone who's grown on me a lot, and you know, we'll talk about him in a little bit, who also has a huge range, Hunter Salas. It'll be fascinating to see where he lands. But
did Steven just jump in this spot? No. Okay. Why are you... I have his season highlights I'm about to edit, but there's like 600 clips I have to go through, so it's taken me a little bit of time.
I have him on the board later, so do you want to talk about it then or now?
Yeah, we can talk about it then.
Okay, cool.
Anyone else in this range?
Man, I'm just getting roasted for AJ Johnson, top 20, but I don't care. No Ceilings Plus members have known for a couple months now that AJ Johnson is reportedly up to 6'7", 180. That plus the athleticism, ignore the numbers this year. They were a disaster. That entire NBL Rising Stars program was tough for a lot of guys this season. I'm buying the work rate. I'm buying the athleticism. I'm buying the ball skills. I'm buying the upside, the physical tools. Even though he would play 10 minutes one night and then 30 seconds the next, every one of those seconds he was on the court, he was doing the little things. He was really intentional about what he was doing on both ends of the court. The growth was there, the commitment to defense. He played physical, even though he was giving up 30 pounds to everyone on the court, basically. So I just think he has the right mindset. I think he has a ton of upside. And if you're thinking about just taking a big home run swing, there aren't many guys in this class that I would be more excited about than AJ.
I'll go three things to back up Metcalf. One, I was tired of hearing Metcalf talk about AJ Johnson. I actually did my deep dive of AJ Johnson this year, and his highs are holy shit. Like, his highs are as good as some guys. Like, just some of the plays he plays hard, and he dunks on people with anger. Like, he's vicious getting downhill. He's got afterburners. He's got some really fun playmaking potential. Like, there's some passes I was like, my goodness. And it's tough because it is flashes with a guy that got that limited playing time. But there's a point, I think I even texted you, where I was like, why the hell didn't they play this kid more? Like, he's just lightning in a bottle. Two, I had a scout in the beginning of the year tell me if AJ went to Texas and stayed there, he would have been in the lottery.
Yeah, so I've been telling you all year, and you're like, who are you getting money from?
Three, we mentioned the rumor to a scout in Portland of there's buzz that he's 6'7" now, and the scout had big eyes and said, that might change a lot of things. Like, it was very interested to hear that. So, going to be interesting. Combine, it's going to be very interesting when they get the measuring stick out, but if we were going from a 6'5" guard with all of that firepower and excitement to now 6'7", changes the world a little bit. Like, it's kind of like, whoa, okay. So I understand AJ will be a swing.
Yeah.
But
yes,
he's probably going to be one of the top guys that teams are going to be like, get in here. We want to see, like, they're going to be lining up to see what this kid can do.
Well, and that was honestly one of the biggest reasons why I put him with the Raptors, because this was their second first round pick. So in my scenario, they're walking away with Alex Sarr and AJ Johnson. So if you only have one first round pick, it's a little tougher to kind of justify how much of a project AJ will still probably be. But if you have multiple, I would be very, very excited about taking that type of swing. All right, let's move on to 21 through 25 after our last break.
Ready to level up? Chumba Casino is your playbook to fun. It's free to play with no purchase necessary. Enjoy hundreds of online social games like blackjack, slots, and solitaire anytime, anywhere with fresh releases every week. Whether you're at home or on the go, let Chumba Casino bring the excitement to you. Plus, get free daily login bonuses and a free welcome bonus. Join now for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Play Chumba Casino today. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. T&Cs apply.
Okay, Rucker, at 21, the New Orleans Pelicans, for me, took Zach Edey. At 22, the Phoenix Suns went Kolek. At 23, the Bucks went Ryan Dunn. At 24 and 25, the Knicks went Yves Missy and Kevin McCullough.
Ooh, I like your... I dare Tibbs not to take McCullough. It's such a good fit for them. I just love McCullough. I think also that's going to be a guy, if he gets the green light with his medicals, I think he's going to go earlier because teams are just going to be buying the versatility. Okay. 21, I went Yves Missy to the Pelicans. I went Zach Edey to the Phoenix Suns at 22. God, I have no idea what they're going to do. 23, I went Kevin McCullough to the Bucks. 24, and 25 to the Knicks, I went Tyler Kolek and Ryan Dunn. Kolek to the Suns is an unbelievable pick by you because it's so Goran Dragic, old days, and it's perfect for like the type of just mentality burst that team needs. I shout out to the T-Wolves, but that was just eye-opening of the ass whooping.
Yeah,
and I have no idea what the Suns are going to do. And all the GM and the owner are coming out and being like, we are in a fantastic position. I was like, bullshit, you're in a fantastic position. So I'm sorry, excuse my language. But I was like, who says this? No one believes. I mean,
it's like you're protesting a little too much there, Matt.
Well, was it James? I'm a big James fan. He seems like a good guy. But someone was like, we got to figure out how to get Durant going. I was like, no shit.
No one's unlocked Durant yet, and we're still figuring out how to do that. It's like, I don't know. It seemed like when he won the MVP in a couple
the balls. Give him the ball. I'm sorry. But yeah, they're gonna They gotta hit on that pick. So I like Kolek there. Edie, I don't know where to put Edie. I don't know where to do it. Makes sense, I guess, with the Pelicans. I'm trying not to have him on the board at 30. That's just what I'm trying to do.
So like for me, a lot of these names kind of shifted around a lot in this range. Like I had Missy down to the Pelicans at one point. I had Edie and Missy down to the Suns. I had Ryan Dunn to the Suns. It was really tricky, but
who'd you have in the bust?
I went Ryan Dunn.
And then Knicks, you had Missy and
McCullough. I thought really hard about Missy to the Bucks, just because they don't really have a whole lot of athleticism and their front court is getting old very quickly. So I think that'd be kind of a fun long, relatively short-ish replacement plan for Lopez, or even just as a backup for the next year or two. But I went with Ryan Dunn just because they have no consistent athleticism and point of attack defense on the perimeter right now. So I think he's the best defender in this draft. If the shot comes, if anything on offense comes, fantastic. But at a minimum, you know that you're getting an elite defender at 6'8", who has experience kind of playing some small ball 5'2". So very kind of funky range for me.
It's so funny because I'm looking at our mocks for like the top 25 picks and like Missy, Dunn maybe, Jalen Tyson, Jacoby, Collier, Holland. I could all see going so much earlier.
Yeah.
And then you get like guys like Cody, Bazella. Like I could just see all of them going so much earlier. It only takes one team. And this is the year where like some team, if they just fall in love with Missy, you could tell me he's going lottery. And I'll be like, I understand why if you're buying the upside, but it's just, that's how crazy this year is going to be because there's going to be depth. Yeah. When you get out of that top five, there's going to be depth. There's going to be value falling down the board. That's why I think it's going to be so interesting to see teams with multiple picks if they're wanting to keep them, or teams that don't are trying to be aggressive to get back up to target some specific range.
Just real quick on Missy. I wrote about Derek Lively's rookie year and kind of what we can take from it for this draft for Friday. Go check that out. But Missy was kind of one of the guys where I was like, all right, what could he have a similar type of rookie season as Lively if he's put into that very kind of same specific role where his responsibilities are rebound, protect the rim, and just dunk everything. And all of his numbers were just really, really impressive where as the roller, 84th percentile in points per possession, 85th percentile on cuts, 80th percentile in at rim points per points per shot, 92% of his shot attempts came at the rim. So it's not like he's forcing things and trying to shoot when he's not a shooter. He played really simplified style. Then I kind of just looked at like the block rate combined with the rebounding rates, and he had an offensive rebounding rate of just over 14, a defensive rebounding rate just over 16, and a block rate just over 7. He was the only freshman from a true high major conference to hit all those benchmarks, and just the ninth since 2008, with some of the other names there were DeMarcus Cousins, Cat, Jalen Duren, Andre Drummond, Steven Adams. So it's translatable stuff that he did all season long. So he doesn't necessarily
have
probably too low. In the 20s, 28, and I don't feel good about it.
My problem, you just said a bunch of really impressive shit. He averaged less than 6 boards a game. It drives me crazy because I want to buy in so much. He averaged 5.6 rebounds a game, 10.7 points, 1.5 blocks. I want to buy in because that's a potential Hulk of a center with athleticism. Like you watched the Auburn game in the beginning of the year. He had that dunk on the breakaway and you're like, holy crap. He does some stuff that's freakish. And then you see some footwork flashes and I'm like, oh my goodness. Like, okay, I get it. I just can't stand when guys are that physically imposing and have the athleticism. It's like, what? why can't we get the rebounds up a little more? But that's also why, like, I'm right there with you. I feel like I have him too low, and I could see a team buying into him in the lottery.
Yeah, and it's weird because I feel like the rebounding, like the per game rebounding stuff, is just because he's only out there for 23 minutes a game. You know, it's per 40, it's up just under 10. The rebounding rates are good, but I get it. I get where you're coming from. And as the season went on, he started showing some more stuff, like with DHO keepers and
yeah,
even driving and stuff, where it's like, oh, that's fun. You know, not a, okay, this is going to be a day one thing, but maybe year two, year three, now we're incorporating that a little more. I just, the numbers and all of that and the comparisons look really good. But every time I just watch the film, I'm like, and just like underwhelmed. I don't know. I don't know what it is. And I just kind of have to go back through it.
Some of those DHO keepers you're talking about, dribble handoffs, for everyone that's like, what the hell are they talking about? Those really got me like, whoa.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, whoa, that's impressive. And he had some drives where he also like would come back. And I was like, that's some stuff I was not expecting. So I get it. It's just, it's annoying because I feel like that's an eye test thing for me, where I'm like, okay, I buy in with the eye test. I buy in with what I'm watching on tape. And then you go look at the numbers and I'm like, why doesn't this match? And so I think I'm going to have to lean on what I'm seeing and just be like buying in, because I have him in my 20s and I'm like, I don't feel good about it.
I don't feel good about it either way, where it's like, if he went 12, I'd be like, okay, like, sure. I kind of get it. If he went end of the first, I'd be like, all right, yeah, that makes sense too. But that's the let's go with fun thing about this draft, is that there are about 20 guys where it's like,
I get it.
I'm not going to be surprised with anything. Yep. Okay, let's move on to 26 through 30 and finish out this first round. At 26, the Wizards, I had Kyshawn George. At 27, the Timberwolves, I had Hunter Salas. At 28, the Nuggets, I went Kyle Filipowski. At 29, the Jazz, Tijane Salloon. And 30, the Celtics, Alex Caraban.
Okay, you'll understand why I'm laughing in a sec. At 26 to the Wizards, I did Khalil Ware. 27 to the Timberwolves, I did Johnny Furphy. 28 to the Nuggets, De'Ron Holmes. 29 to Tijane Salloon to the Jazz. And 30, Justin Edwards to the Celtics. Let me just stop everyone right now. Yes, Salloon, that late. Biggest range ever for me right now. We just had this talk about I would understand if he goes much earlier. I would understand if he goes this late. I think Salloon's probably top three of biggest ranges right now, right this second. Has some of the biggest range of this class. We're going to find out a lot more when it comes to how the pre-draft process goes for him and where teams are at and where that value kind of starts to figure it out. But I think right this second, it is completely wide open. You could tell me he goes top 10. You could tell me he goes late first. I'll be like, I get anywhere. Metcalf wrote about him previously, obviously did a great job. I've done my deep dive on him. It's a headache.
It's all theoretical.
It is a theory, and that is the scariest thing for me to draft. It's the theory.
The flashes are incredible. He is arguably the hardest worker every time he's out on the court, which is awesome. Much better to have that than not. But the on-ball defense is still a mess. The off-ball defense is super inconsistent. The shooting, I buy it still. I think he's going to be a good shooter, but then you look at the percentages, and it's like mid-30s. I think he's like just over 35% on the year. There's nothing off the dribble. There's no passing. The at-rim finishing is super inconsistent. But the flashes and that size and that athleticism and that work rate and the physical tools, it's like, oh my God, if this guy hits, he's going to fucking hit. But that gap between him hitting and not hitting, it feels like a very long list of things that have to go right.
Yeah, it doesn't even seem like swinging for the fences. It seems like you're swinging for a grand slam down three in the bottom of the ninth. You're just like, oh, no hit. We need a grand, like, all in. It just seems, and there's good stuff where it comes, like the outside shot looks like it could be something. He is relentless motor. Like he might not know what he's doing all the time, but he plays hard.
Yeah.
So it's just one of those things. Like if you could buy yourself on that and then be like, okay, we believe that with time, the field could come around. And this is probably a guy that just needs to get pummeled with G League minutes because he just needs reps. But he plays hard. He's going to be probably one of those guys that measures really well if the buzz I've heard is legit. And if you're buying the shot and at that size, I get it. It's just there's a lot of areas of his game that are just completely untapped. So he's going to be the biggest roll of the dice at the casino, I think. And that's why I have him late. It's not that I wouldn't swing. It's just if I was a team with multiple picks, I would swing. And Utah would be the team that I think could just be like, we're swinging for sure on someone with this high of upside.
Absolutely. Anyone else you want to cover?
Furphy is puzzling to me. I feel like that's going to be a guy that I'm going to go back in on because I've heard good things. I've heard other just like not as high. And I'm just puzzled with him. Because I don't know if it's teams are going to be believing more of like he's going to be an early asset or if teams are going to be more investing into not a project. You know what I'm trying to say? Not a project, but just like being patient with that, because I do think there's some good tools. What about you?
Yeah, and I'm still in on Furphy, probably a little more than I should be. I really buy the shot. I really buy the athletic tools. I think the shooting and the scoring kind of tailed off at the end of the year. A big part of that was Kansas had zero other perimeter scorers on that team, especially when McCullough was hurt. And when you go from not on the scouting report to the first line, it's a really tough adjustment. So still a ton he has to improve on, but we talked earlier about how rebounding translates. I don't know what that comment means.
Someone just said guy on the left has Mark Wahlberg's eyes. I need to print that on a shirt or something. Sorry.
Well, you can explain to me what that means off air.
I don't know.
but we talked about how rebounding translates, and he was an awesome rebounder on both ends of the floor all season. So probably a little higher than most on him at this point, but I'd be thrilled to get him at 27 to Minnesota.
Okay, let's talk about Hunter Salas. Because I also liked how we went a little out of norm with the Celtics pick of like, I went Justin Edwards swing, you did Caravan, which I would love that fit. But I do want to talk about Salas because our own Stephen Gillespie he's starting the Hunter Salas fan club for No Ceilings. Very, very passionate about it. Shout out, Stephen. Talk to me.
I've been so out on Salas for most of this year, but a big reason was I saw him just get punked by Reese Beekman in that matchup, and I haven't been able to get that out of my mind. But I've caught up on all of his games. I think I have like two left. But instead of viewing him through this prism as that primary perimeter scorer or this heavy on-ball usage offensive creator and shooter and shot creator, I'm starting to view him more through the lens of a KCP or a Nickeil Alexander-Walker, where he's this tool off the bench and can really put most of his energy into being a point of attack defender, being switchable on defense, and then just knocking down shots off the catch. His mid-range scoring has been really impressive. I really like his outside shot. Especially off the catch, a little less so off the dribble, but if he's that kind of complimentary piece in a rotation off the bench, like a Nickeil Alexander-Walker has been, that's where it becomes a lot of fun. And then you kind of get you're able to pair the ball skills and the offensive creation that he's shown this year and pivot it more into an off-ball role where he's now attacking closeouts and creating for others. And specifically in this, Timberwolves context, he's attacking downhill and throwing lobs to Gobert or kicking it out to the opposite corner for Kat or Naz Reid or Anthony Edwards. So that kind of long-term Nickeil Alexander-Walker replacement for the Timberwolves, because he's getting paid $4 million this year. He's getting paid $4 million next year. I would be floored if they're able to keep him after that, especially if he has another year similar to how he played this year. So it's more so 2 years from now, is he able to take that defense up even another level and kind of fill in those shoes?
Makes sense. I mean, it's been one guy that has been up on my list to kind of do my deep dive on, but I just got to dive into it. Trying to catch up on everyone else, but I get it. There's a lot of people that really like Salas. I mean, I watched some games this year and it was like, okay, I get it. This guy's having a fantastic year. He's really, forget the game I watched, but I was just like, man, he's just getting everywhere he wants and he's getting to the same spot and he's showing patience to get to that spot. He just picked a team apart. I'm blanking on who it was, but then I watched it wasn't Beekman. I know the Beekman game you're talking about because I was like, oh boy, but I feel like some other, it wasn't Devin Carter, someone was just kind of giving him enough tough time too. So it's just one of those, we always say though, like you can't get too high or too low from one game. You got to kind of take the whole evaluation on. And we've liked Salas since he was at Gonzaga. It's just one of those like, okay, like this could be a new situation, darling. And I wrote about him previously in one of my pieces of like, this could be the wild card because the new situation's been fantastic. So he's one of my guys I'm the most excited to catch up on his stuff. But any other names or any names that you were surprised didn't find their way into the first?
A couple that were really close for me, Carrington, Antonio Reeves, Mark Sears, PJ Hall, Jalen Tyson, Daron Holmes, a handful of guys that like just missed out that were really in consideration for a lot of those kind of last 10 picks, and names that I wouldn't be surprised at all if they end up going first round, especially Carrington, Holmes. You are going to Denver. I love that fit. We both kind of went toolsy, really highly productive bigs, kind of thinking backup center help for them long-term. Jalen Tyson, you wrote about him last week. Really interesting player. I'm close.
I need you buying.
And I have him at 33. So
I need you to buy.
I know. What about you?
I didn't have Neek going because I'm tired of putting him to the Celtics because I don't want anyone to steal. I like that idea. I still could see Pacome Dattier going in the first round. Caravan's a good wild card. Dylan Jones, I'm still very high on. I think all it takes is one team with him. I think if he didn't go in the first round, he'd be one of the first picks in the second round just because I think teams would be buying in on the versatility and you'll figure it out because he can do a lot of things on the court. PJ Hall is going to be another name I'm really fascinated about with the pre-draft process because I don't know why I can't get the idea of the Knicks just being like – tough, hardworking, big that can space the floor. Makes a lot of sense to kind of get another weapon. I feel like he'd be a fan favorite in New York. There's a lot of names, Metcalf. There's a lot of names that I really could see making some sense and jumping up there. Like AJ, still, I could believe. Bobby Klempman, personally, I'm a lower on, but I could see him going in the first. And then, just wild cards like Juan Nunez, if teams are buying, like there's a lot of guys that it would not, it's like we talk, it would not shock me. Bub Carrington is probably the big one that I would be like.
Where do you have him?
I have him at 34. Okay. I have not updated my board. I watched his stuff. I'd be swinging.
Yeah,
I would be swinging. There's fun stuff there. There's some stuff he's got to clean up, but there's too much potential for another level to be reached quickly. He reaches that level, things are going to get scary. Yeah. I would be going to get him. If I was in a front office that could stress patience, I'd let him run in the G for a year and unleash him the next year. Cause I just think he's so young. He's going to be one of the youngest guys, I think, in this class, but that He's got some feel. He loves the mid range. He's got a good, he takes one of my least favorite shots ever, which is like a foot in front of the 3-point line. It's like, why are you making life so hard? But he's really good when he works to get to that little mid range across the lane fade. And it's with his size, it's so hard to defend. So he's just got to add a couple things and then you're really cooking with something. But I came away from his film like, yep, I'm a believer. I'd be in for sure.
Totally agree. Starting around like pick 20 and on, I thought about him.
I wouldn't be shocked if he goes earlier.
I thought about him a lot. I thought the defense got a lot better all year. Obviously, the at-rim finishing stuff isn't where you want it to be. Like you said, a little too mid-range dependent, but I thought he played on and off ball. And when he did pressure the rim, he was typically looking to create for others. I thought the playmaking was really good all year. Just super inconsistent as a shooter. That's stuff that you can improve on, though. The defense improving throughout the year was really encouraging for me. And even after that kind of prolonged shooting slump, in the middle of the year, he still kind of finished pretty strong. So I think he has a really good chance to go first round, and was the highest rated guy for me who I didn't have in this exercise.
Yeah, like I could... A lot of teams now that I'm looking back where I'm like, ooh, we can make a lot of sense. Like Toronto at 19, if they didn't get a point guard early, might make some sense. New Orleans, I think, could make some sense. A lot of teams. I mean, you can even talk to me about the Knicks or I don't know, depending on what happens with really the Wizards. Fun. If the Wizards didn't, if they got a big early, the Wizards, that would make a big swing.
Or like I had the Jazz taking Topic at 4 and Saloon at 29. If they instead went with a big or a wing or something that early, and then Carrington sitting there for them at 29, I would jump all over that.
Yeah, completely agree.
All right. Anything else? We all set.
No. Fantastic one as always. Thanks for everyone being patient. Sorry, Metcalf, to leave you flying solo. Shout out technology. That's why sometimes we roll the dice going live. You know, some it just got to get dangerous. So I hope you had a good little vent. But
just
talked
so
great
much
one.
Shit about you. So
yeah, get in line.
All right. Thanks, everyone, in the comments. You guys were awesome, as always. If you enjoyed this episode, please make sure to subscribe, leave a review, and a 5-star rating. Till next time. See ya.